We are joined now in studio by Brian Abood from the Collective for Syria. They have an upcoming candlelight march, which will be happening tomorrow at 8:30 p.m., starting at Norman Bethune Square and continuing through downtown Montreal. He's here to speak to us about the work of the Collective and the uprising and regime crackdown that has overcome Syria for the last 4 months. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So how long has the Collective for Syria been in existence, and what is your primary mission?
Well, it has its beginnings at the very start of the uprising. So I guess we're into about just over five months of this uprising, and the Collective would date its beginnings to about there or just after. I mean, it came together really as a kind of a merging of disparate activities that were going on by various groups in the city, some of which were planning public events, public activities in order to respond to what was happening in Syria. That is as of mid-March. And perhaps another set of people of whom I was part, who were meeting to discuss the events, to think about ways of responding, ways of organizing, making some kind of collective statement and so on. And gradually these two sets of Montrealers who were really had common concerns about bringing to the attention of Montrealers and to Canadians what was happening in Syria, and really who had in common a concern that the position, the standpoint of the protesters be brought to broader public attention. So these two groups gradually merged, and over the first 2 to 3 weeks or so of the uprising, and after having a number of meetings, organized ourselves into something called the Collective for Syria in Montreal. That collective really has its beginnings around in relation to the first Global Syria Day that we decided to organize, which was in, it was early June, if I recall now. But I think this is, it's similar to how groups concerned with other kinds of issues come together. I think what might be a bit unique about this group is that there was nothing existing in a collective, in collective terms, having to do with Syria, in these particular terms. Okay, in terms that we're making, that we're analyzing, examining the political situation and raising criticisms against the Syrian state.
Yeah, so mainstream media sources in Canada, they send a lot of mixed messages about what is happening in Syria, largely due to Western biases about culture that always seem to cloud our international news reporting that we get. So the Syrian community abroad seems to be one of the best situated to tell us what is happening in the country. So for our listeners, why is Syria in this situation? What are the messages of those groups that make up the opposition to the current regime? And what is the status of the opposition movement under the government crackdown in Syria?
Okay, perhaps I'll take those questions
one by one.
I think insofar as Western media reporting is concerned, I think what we could say about the reporting within that portion of the media that we call the mainstream or corporate media and so on, I think what we could say about its coverage of the Syrian situation is probably not unlike what we would say, the kind of criticisms that we might direct against towards the media with respect to its coverage on the Middle East in general, going back quite some time now, decades, right? Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways those things are reflected, those biases, those assumptions, the cultural biases, assumptions about Arabs and Muslims, about the region, and so on, are reflected in what is being said and reported on about Syria. I think so you've got that is part of the one way in which to understand the coverage of the Western media. I think that's important though also to point out that it's one would want to not speak in general terms or direct a criticism in general towards the Western media. I think there is some corporate mainstream media organizations that are doing a better job at presenting what's going on in Syria than others. I can't speak too much about them because I don't listen or watch them, to be honest. But I do think that there's some print media that's doing a pretty good job. Another thing to mention about reporting is that Syria, of course, the Syrian state is not allowing journalists into the country to cover events there. So information is there's There's very little in the way of direct observational understanding of what's happening in Syria. Information is having to come in by other means. And often, you know, the internet in particular has been a very important source of information about what's happening in Syria from a standpoint other than what the Syrian state media is telling us. The Syrian state media is, you know, pretty much monopolizing what is being said from the standpoint, well, as one would expect, from the standpoint of the state. So you've got all of these things going on, and I think people need to diversify their sources of information and with respect to Syria, and look for information from sources other than, you know, the corporate and Western media, and a lot of it is available and accessible. Now, insofar as what is happening in Syria, well, I guess there's, if we were to understand the origins of what has been transpiring over the last 5 months, well, we would have to look at, you know, we'd have to go back some fairly long way into history to understand it. We could probably say the least distant account would be starting in around the 1970s or so, when a regime emerged in Syria led by Hafez al-Assad in alliance with the Ba'ath Party. The circumstances in Syria now really have their proximate origins in the kind of state that was established after Hafez al-Assad acceded to power in a military coup in 1970 and set up a regime that has been in existence ever since. Presidential power was inherited by his son in 2000, by Bashar al-Assad in 2000, and I think those would be, looking at that juncture point would be probably an important one to take into account. The current uprising has to be understood as arising in part from the opening that accompanied Bashar al-Assad's assumption with power. He, in fact, began a process of political opening, allowing for debate and discussion, even debate and discussion that was critical or oppositional and expressed, you know, concerns and criticism about the Syrian state. Now, that's important to point out only because prior to that, throughout most of the period of Hafez al-Assad's rule in Syria, there were very little opportunities. Criticism was really limited, if not entirely absent. So you had this opening, right, in the early 2000s that led to the emergence of something called civil society movement, people who got together to debate, to discuss what was happening in Syria, often from a critical point of view. And the emergence of these organizations, the fora that were also organized for discussion, coincided with something that came to be called the Damascus Spring. So you had the beginnings of oppositional activity. That didn't last very long, and the Assad regime clamped down on that kind of activity. Many of the people who were taking leadership roles in these civil society movements were imprisoned. And so that pretty much brought an end to the opportunity to question what the Syrian government was doing. So that's part of the horizon of events that we have to take into account. The uprising has, you know, we have to situate it within the changes that were happening in the region since late 2010, early 2011, and most specifically I'm talking about the uprisings and the revolutions in Tunisia and in Egypt. I think, you know, what happened in Syria is an outcome of those really transformative political events in the region. So that would be, you know, among the most proximate causes of determinants of the uprising from within the region. There was a third part to your question, which had to do with the opposition itself, I think, right?
I know in your press release and for this event, you're citing the amount of people who have come to be imprisoned and killed during this uprising, and I'm guessing that is a lot of the motivation for the second global day for Syria, which is the Candlelight March. So I was wondering if you could just touch on the current situation of people in Syria that has motivated this.
Well, We feel that the Collective for Syria's main purpose is to show solidarity with Syrians, with the Syrians who are protesting for change, and change of a significant kind, of a meaningful kind. That is protest, rather change that is consistent with a set of principles like respect for each other, democracy, justice, liberty. Okay, and we feel that the people who have been who've been coming out in the streets and protesting publicly for change in Syria that's consistent with those principles, they need support. Now, I think, as most people will know, those protests were met immediately by the Syrian were met with violence, repression, brutality, imprisonments, killing, and so on by the Syrian regime. So this is an uprising that is based on an attachment to a set of universal values, and I think all of us have an interest in seeing a struggle that seeks to achieve something that's based on universal values succeed. And so we felt that we needed to show support with a second version or a second edition of Global Syria Day. But since the first Global Syria Day, we had been consistently doing various kinds of public activities and activities of other kinds to bring to people's awareness what is happening in Syria. This event on Saturday has as one of its central themes the brutalities that have been perpetrated against children. It's among the focal points of this Global Syria Day is what is happening to children in Syria. Recent figures from human rights organizations about the number of people killed in Syria, protesters, peaceful protesters, unarmed protesters, is in the range of 2,000. Among these, somewhere between 80 to 100 are children, teenagers, preteen youth. And so we feel that some highlight, some focus has to be put on these facets of the response of the Syrian regime to what is really legitimate, noble protest by Syrians who, okay, broadly speaking, just want freedom and liberty. They want to be able to meaningfully participate in the decision making. In the planning of their country's present and in their country's future. And they're being met with lies, crass propaganda, brutality, imprisonment, disappearance. They're in need of support. So Global Syria Day's purpose is to bring that struggle to the attention of Montrealers to a greater degree.
So do you want to touch on the details of the Candlelight March that is happening tomorrow, how people can get involved and attend?
Well, we're starting at 8:30 at Norman Bethune Square, so that's where that's the initial gathering point, and then we'll be marching through parts of downtown Montreal soon after that. I think people can get information at the Collective website. I think if you Google Collective for Syria in Montreal, you'll fall immediately on that website, and so you'll have the information about the time and so on there. But in a nutshell, that's what it is. It'll be starting at 8 o'clock at Norman Bethune Square. People, what we want to do is march through the streets of Montreal with candles in a silent procession to draw attention to what's happening in Syria. I think this kind of activity is particularly resonant insofar as in Syria. Sometime after the uprising, perhaps in the second month or so, maybe after the first month or so of the uprising, what we found was that in many Syrian cities, people were coming out to express their protest, their objections, and so on at night, because the response of the Syrian regime during the day was simply one of violence, brutality, and so on and so forth. So partly to protect themselves, they started to organize evening, nighttime vigils, nighttime protests, and so on. So I think in order to show solidarity in various respects, it seems particularly fitting to hold an event in Montreal at night. But that's essentially what we'll be doing. So I hope people will join us both at the beginning, the rally at the beginning, and then throughout the march in downtown Montreal. We'll be mostly going on along St. Catherine's. If people can't make it to the beginning, look for us on St. Catherine Street.
Thank you very much for joining us
today.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
I hope to see you all at the march.
That was CKUT's Ray Dooley speaking with Brian Aboud, who joined us live in studio to talk about the Candlelight March for Serious People. You're listening to Friday's edition of Off the Hour on CKUT 90.3.